Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. He is the former congressman from Congressional District 2 here in New Mexico. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've seen so much rain in southeast New Mexico. I travel to areas that typically never have grass, and it's up almost knee-high out through the pastures. It really is stunning. It's green and lush. Looking down here in southeast New Mexico, never gets green and lush. So we're thankful every day.
Well, let me get to business here. I wanted to ask you about Cuba, because this is very interesting what's going on in Cuba. Of course, they've wanted to be free for years. They're under the Castro regime. And I don't see our president welcoming them the way he's welcoming people from south of our border.
No, that's exactly right. And Ron DeSantis, as a matter of fact, called him out on that. DeSantis, of course, is the governor of Florida. I know him well. We served in Congress together. We're both members of the Freedom Caucus. And he's one of the smartest guys that I had seen come through Congress. He called out Biden talking about his double standards, saying that people escaping from the communists in Cuba have a much stronger argument to why they should be allowed to come in and seek some sort of refuge, to seek sanctuary, to get away from the harsh treatment of people who want freedom when the communists find out about them. He compares that to the people who are coming across for economic benefit at the southern border. He's sympathetic to the people who want a better life. We all are, but they should be coming through the legal immigration channels. If you have people who are coming here for sanctuary purposes, Cuban refugees would certainly be higher on the list. But it's like the Biden administration is putting up roadblocks to the Cubans who are trying to get here. And that's unfortunate, because then they're forced to go over to Mexico, and then they have to walk up across the border. They're allowed to cross the border with everybody else. There's no one even checking at the southern border. And then they have to make their way to Florida, where their families are. And meanwhile, they're just 90 miles away from Florida when they are in Cuba. So I think DeSantis is correct, pointing out that this administration not only is treating the refugees the way they are, but they're treating the people in Cuba. There are massive protests going on in Cuba, and it's as if the Biden administration suddenly can't find their tongue. They can't say anything. They had encouraged the BLM rioters, the people who burned buildings, the people who caused death, destruction. But now then you have outspoken critics of the communist regime in Cuba, and Biden suddenly can't find it in himself to side with them, which makes you wonder, is he really on the side of freedom or not? Because the Cubans have experienced this for over half a century, this communist rule. Back in the 50s, the early 50s, late 40s, Cuba was one of the most powerful economies in the Western Hemisphere. They were right along with us in Argentina. Then they chose to let Castro come to power. He began to kill those people who supported him to get into power. It was the Catholic Church. The intelligentsia associated with that decided they would support him. He began to kill them as soon as he got power. The gay community supported Castro moving in, and he began to kill the gays as soon as he got into power. He and Che Guevara were some of the most radical extremists when it comes to killing their own kind, just really bullied people into submission. And now you've got folks standing in the streets saying, we want food, we want liberty, we want freedom. And it seems appropriate that the American president would say something in their behalf, but he hasn't.
I had a very good friend in California from Cuba. His father worked for Batista, who was the president before Castro came in. They barely escaped with their lives. And he said, we always vote Republican because we figured the Republicans are more likely to overtake Castro than the Democrats.
Yeah, I've talked to many Cubans, and I've talked to many people here in New Mexico who've escaped from those communist countries, whether it be those in Europe that picked up the communist mantra after the Soviet Union formed, Cuba, anywhere else in the world. And they have said, you don't want what you're trying to get into place here. Now, this whole discussion brings us to a concept that many people are asking about right now, and that's the process of gaslighting. People don't know exactly what it means, but it's just basically a form of psychological manipulation. And it's where one person or a group of people try to manipulate another group of people or a single person into believing and questioning their own reality. They question their own memories, their own recollections of what really happened. And many times the people who are being manipulated, maybe they're afraid of some retaliation from the people who are trying to gaslight them, who are trying to manipulate them and trying to convince them that what they believe is not true. And that's going on throughout the country, but especially with things like Cuba. The mainstream media would have you believe that Cuba was just a garden spot, that it is a wonderful place. But you don't find anyone anyone going to Cuba from here. You don't find them going down there to seek their dreams. You instead find the Cubans coming here to seek the dreams. There's a fascinating article in a website called the City Journal. It's a Manhattan Institute. A guy named Martin Greer in the winter 2021 publication, he writes about slouching toward post-journalism. And the post-journalism is where the journalists are no longer interested in the facts of a story or digging deep and exposing corruption. They instead are pushing agendas. They are trying to create anger is their basic intent. If they create anger among the people who are listening to them, then they're succeeding in their minds. So if you remember the Mueller probe, there was actually nothing factual about it, but they created so much anger and hysteria toward Trump over that, that instead of when Mueller is found to be a total nothing, that there was never anything there, instead of that being a failure for the post-journalist process, it was considered to be a great success because they had driven anger toward Trump over nothing. He was guilty of nothing, and yet they generated that anger. Similarly, this polarization that they're trying to achieve is playing out in the 1619 Project. The New York Times has one of the writers who is leading the effort in that arena to say that 1776 was not the founding of the country. It was when the first slaves who arrived here. That's when the founding of the country was. And they're trying to drive this tremendous racial divide, and they're succeeding because the gaslighting is working. They're convincing a lot of people that this country, which is probably the most progressive in racial relations in the entire world, I know we have problems, but we have greater opportunities for a broader spectrum of demographics here than anywhere else in the world. I've traveled most of the world. I've seen it both personally and through the United States Air Force. I had the opportunity to travel a lot in other countries and to see what people are now saying, that the U.S. has never given diverse people a chance. It's absolutely not true. And yet this gaslighting is working so that a lot of people are saying, well, this country never was great. We've never done a thing for anyone. It's a very radical position, but it's the post-journalist idea of what journalism is all about. And so I would urge people to become involved. Go to that website, City Journal, Manhattan Institute. Take a look at that full article. It's very instructive about where journalism has gone. It's not going here in this country. It's already gone. And the fact that they aligned themselves against Trump and caused Trump's defeat over nothing, over no Mueller, over none of the other raid allegations that were made, two impeachments, no convictions out of it, and yet they created this anger, this agenda-driven, this partisanship. That was their whole function of their journalistic intent.
There is a tactic that our enemies use to get us fighting amongst each other. I've heard it said that racism in this country is worse than ever. How is that possible when we've had a black president? We have black and Hispanic governors and representatives in Washington.
Yeah, and I remind people that it was the Republicans that freed the slaves, that the initial black representatives in Congress came only from the Republican Party. The party of Jim Crow, the party of segregation, the party of slavery were the Democrats. And so, again, the gaslighting has been very effective because the black voters have for decades voted with the Democrats. And that's where Trump was hated so bad by the left, because he said to the black voter, "What you got to lose? Vote for me." He said, I'm at least going to be a change. And then the black voters began to see that. And so, again, we're facing a very steep uphill climb when it comes to this messaging, but the truth is on our side, and truth is very powerful.
Steve Pierce and I will be back with more Inside New Mexico in just a moment.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico, and I'm talking with our chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Pierce. Steve, I see where OPEC is starting to see what's happening in our country, maybe, and increasing their production. Is that correct?
That is exactly right. So people always wonder, what difference does it make when somebody in the Middle East changes their policies? Well, it makes a huge difference because OPEC, the Organization for Petroleum Exporting Countries, is saying they're going to increase production. UAE and Saudi Arabia have been in a knockdown drag got over who gets how much production. And in this new agreement, UAE is going to increase from 3.2 million barrels a day to 3.5 million barrels a day. And so they are satisfied. And so they're going to increase production across the board. What that's going to do is drive down the price of oil here in the United States. Anytime you increase the supply of something, then you're going to have less cost for it. So if you increase the supply of workers, they're going to work for less. If you decrease the supply of workers, then there's a great demand for them. They'll be attracted to go across the street for a higher wage, and the price of workers goes up. So with more oil being produced, then you can just understand right away that New Mexico this time next year probably will not be seeing as good revenue figures as they're seeing right now. Actually, things are booming again in Lee County and Eddy County, and so it's driving a surplus in Santa Fe. That surplus of tax money is coming directly from the increased production, but next year, then you should worry that the budgets are going to be a little slimmer because of the increase in production in the OPEC countries.
I remember that happened a few years back. We were becoming oil independent, so they dropped the price so much to try and drive our small producers out of business completely. Remember, yes, it was down to $30 a barrel, right?
Yeah, and the small producers dominantly are in New Mexico, so New Mexico is right at the tip of that spear. If they had succeeded in causing those stripper wells, the small producers that are just stripping the last of the oil out of the ground, then it would have been really dramatic for us here in this state, but fortunately they did not succeed.
But you know, some of our friends across the aisle would be all for this because they don't want oil and gas in New Mexico.
They don't want it, and they have no clue where they would come up with the money. They say that they would legalize marijuana. That's not going to provide $3 billion. That's basically what the oil and gas community provides right now to the state tax coffers. And so it's a huge problem that we face if we are New Mexico without oil and gas, and yet the left, the progressives, the radical Democrats would gladly shut down that industry. Forget the number of people who would be placed without a job. It would be very damaging.
People are coming to the United States from other countries. They're coming across our southern border. I saw a statistic in June, 188,000 people that were caught by the Border Patrol. We don't know how many actually have come across that weren't caught.
Yeah, the Border Patrol says they're completely overwhelmed. And in fact, we're getting push from everywhere. But then also, we had the National Border Patrol Council chief, a guy named Randy Clark, 32 years with the Border Patrol. He was standing beside Governor Abbott and Ron DeSantis, who was visiting in Texas. He had contributed law enforcement officers to that southern border to help seal off and secure the border in Texas between Texas and Mexico. And so this 32-year Border Patrol professional called out the Biden administration, saying that it is an absolute nightmare, that it is causing undue problems with the immigrants themselves. There were many pictures of immigrants just crowded into these holding facilities. Again, the press was all over that when Trump was president, but now they're curiously absent from the argument. We're being gaslighted on that. So this article, this Randy Clark said that always you have a question when you have a problem at the border, should there be more people or a better policy? And he said, policy is always the preferred objective. He said, under President Trump, the policy of catch and release was stopped. And he said, it shut down the traffic at the border. He said, it was very secure and we were processing people legally. Now then, with Biden saying, come on in, we welcome you here. You don't have to get a health check. You don't have to have a background check. We're not going to do a criminal background check on you. Just come on here and you're going to be welcome. And they're being overwhelmed at the border. And so that article in Breitbart, and again, I would draw you to that. It was on the 18th of July. Take a look at that and you'll see Border Patrol officials calling out the Biden administration to improve their policies.
And for those who would like information from a local source, I have an interview from our affiliate in Grants, KMIN, with Fred Rodarte talking to our own Sheriff Tony Mace, who was down on the border and had this to say.
I've heard that you've had the opportunity to visit our southern border a few times, so I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
That's correct. My deputies do a great job here in Cibola County. We've been really cracking down on some of the narcotics that are coming into our community, and my interdiction officer, Deputy Armijo, with his K-9 Rankin, they've been really impacting the drug trade, and probably once a week we're picking up $1 million worth of,
wow,
or more worth of fentanyl, methamphetamine, and heroin and stuff like that.
That often?
That are coming in. Some of it's past passing through our community and some of it's coming into our community. And recently, it was a two-year-long investigation. We were able to tie some of those narcotics to individuals that were living in our community. And we were able to charge that individual with federal crimes in working with the Drug Enforcement Administration office out of Albuquerque. And two of the citizens from here are now sitting in federal custody on federal narcotics charges for methamphetamine and heroin. Through that investigation, they were able to also work it all the way back to the supplier, which were two individuals out of the Phoenix area that were also basically the big fish, what we call. They were the suppliers that were sending those narcotics into our community. Those individuals were also taken into custody with the Drug Enforcement Agency and charged federally as well, which kind of, in my position as the, not only as the sheriff of Cibola County, I'm also the president of the New Mexico Sheriff's Association. So I hear what goes on, and, you know, we have our meetings and our committee hearings and stuff, and we talk about what's going on in other counties throughout the state of New Mexico. I'm the immediate past president of the Western State Sheriff's Association, so I hear what's going on with sheriffs nationwide. Because, you know, I'm involved in that. And then with that, there's a committee that's our border states, border counties, border sheriffs. We do a lot of proactive stuff with what's going on our border, because what we're finding is a lot of those narcotics that we're intercepting here. A lot of people say that, hey, what happens at the border? That's a border problem. Well, no, what's going on at the border is going to be in your backyard or in our communities real quick. And, you know, we're talking about protecting America. We want to make our streets safe. We want to make our community safe. So a lot of these narcotics, they're coming across the border. You know, you got people coming by with the sanctuary status, or they want to flee their country.
Immigrants.
What the cartel's doing is they're capitalizing on that, and they're using that to get some of these narcotics across. And a lot of what we're seeing is when we interdict these people and when we apprehend them, they're picking up a lot in the Arizona area and going from the west to the east. And then you have money coming flowing back from the east coast to the west, back to the border.
Is I-40 a big...
Oh, I-40 is a major pipeline for narcotics. Okay. For narcotics. And Cibola County is not a border county, but I also, representing the border sheriffs for New Mexico, we have Luna County, Hidalgo County, and Doña Ana County that sit right on the southern border by the Rio Grande. And just some of the important things with that is, for this year, in 2021 alone, there's been 6,918 arrests of non-criminal citizens. So those are individuals that have committed a crime in the United States and been deported, and then they're coming back across is what they're finding. And some of these are crimes that have been committed in like 2018, 2017. They're trying to come back in, and we're talking gang members, violent homicides, sex offenders, a whole slew of things that are coming on.
Tony Mace is a good friend of mine, Democrat. He's one of the ones that prove that we as Republicans and Democrats can get along together. We see life very similar. He wants a secure border. He wants criminals to pay for their crimes. He's one who stood against defunding the police. And so this example of Democrats working with Republicans is one that I think is very vivid and much more common than what people think about.
Steve Pearce and I will be right back with more Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
We are back on Inside New Mexico. I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party, Steve Pearce. And Steve, I understand the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, recently had to put some reporters in their place. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Governor DeSantis, I know him, again, very well. He's very congenial, pretty mild-mannered. But he also stands his ground, and so he has got clips that somebody accumulated, put them all together, and they put them out on the Internet, and he is correcting reporters as they try to change the facts underneath them, and he's not letting them do it. That was something that President Trump was very good at, and so seeing that Ron DeSantis has that same capability is something I think that people are going to feel proud of.
Governor, what has gone wrong with the rollout of the vaccine that we've seen phone lines jammed, websites crashing?
There's a lot of demand.
And
I mean,
also,
I think at the end of the day,
excuse me.
You just said what has gone wrong, so I'm answering the question.
If I could complete the question, though.
So are you going to give a speech or are you going to answer? Ask a question?
With all due respect, Governor,
you asked the question. I'm going
to
answer it.
I'm trying to finish my question.
No, you're giving a speech. You asked the question.
I am trying to ask you the...
You're going to ask how many questions? You get three? They only got one question. Why do you get three?
With all due respect, Governor, I'm just asking if I could finish my question. My full question is, what went wrong with the rollout of the vaccine when we've seen phone lines jammed, websites
crashing. So you're repeating your question.
To complete it for you, Governor, senior citizens waiting overnight for the vaccine.
Where was that at? County. Why was, like in Lee, why did that happen? Did you investigate why?
That's my question to you, Governor. You're the governor of the state. I'm not the governor of the state.
Okay, but you didn't investigate why that, like in Lee County, why was there a big line? Did you investigate why?
Could you tell us why?
Because we distributed vaccine to hospitals, and the hospital said, first come, first serve. If you show up, we'll do it.
I saw a recent poll, and it's something like 60 to 70%. Republicans, Democrats, Independents alike do not think that the media is fair. And we talked about that gaslighting that they're doing in almost every story now. And so people understand that intuitively, and they understand that the media is one of the hallmarks of a free people, that the media is supposed to hold both sides accountable. When they become a spokesman for one side or the other, then it doesn't help our republic at all.
I see where in both Arizona and Georgia, they're doing these audits of the 2020 election, and information is coming out of absolute fraud, and the press will not report it.
Absolute fraud. And there are, again, articles almost everywhere. Red State had a very interesting article just recently in the last two or three days, talking about the earth-shaking revelations that are coming out of Arizona and that Maricopa County recount, and just thousands and tens of thousands of errors of great magnitude, almost certainly changing the course of the election. As those become more public, then it puts the Biden administration's push for this John Lewis voting reform. It's nothing but taking over the elections from the federal government, and the federal government should not be running that any more than they ought to be running our schools or they ought to be running the post office. The federal government can't do any of those things very well. Leave it to local people. Let the power be as close to the people as possible. Then when you have problems, the local people can correct them and move ahead. But when it's the government from D.C., you almost have no power. So that brings us to what one of my friends, Thad McCotter, former congressman from Michigan, he wrote in a website called AG, the American Greatness, and this was just in the last week or so. But Thad McCotter, former congressman, a friend of mine, writes about the founding elite versus the current elite. He quotes from a lady. She ran a tweet on July the 4th, and she talked about our founding fathers who pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on this revolution. And she points out if they came out on the losing side, they were going to be broke, dead, or remembered as traitors. And she said that's pretty ballsy. And you have to describe that as being a correct way to describe our founding fathers. But now then, if you look at the elite, you look at Hunter Biden selling art. We don't know how much he paid for that art, and we're not going to know how much he sold it for. The White House lawyers are looking to cover all of that up. And so it's a way that they can get paid off for favors, and no one can send them to jail over it. It's surely corruption, and yet nothing is happening. And that's what Thad McCotter is pointing out. The founding fathers stood on principle, and yet the current elite, they're trying to protect and enhance their fortunes. They're trying to protect their power base. They're trying to protect the privileged position they have in society. And that's not what this country was founding on. The founding fathers, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, they were all very wealthy. They had come here and then become landowners and farmers, so they were wealthy. And they pledged it all. They risked it all in order to found this republic that we call the United States of America. They did point out that when they left that convention hall in Philadelphia, having created the Constitution, one woman asked, I think it was Ben Franklin, what did you give us? And he said, we gave you a republic, if you can keep it. Well, we're right in the heart of the question whether or not we can keep it. We're within one generation of losing it always. But when we see what our kids are being taught in school, when we see the effects of the gaslighting in every issue that we have, and the press is swinging more and more people into this hatred of this country and our background, when our memories are being erased about the beautiful things this country has stood for, and the value of freedom to the human race, the value of private property and of the free market, all of those things are at risk, and our kids are being taught to hate it all. So I think there's never been a more important time for us to stand up as a people and fight back, fight for the truth and fight for liberty, fight for the passionate belief that freedom is always best for people. So those things are things that we're talking about in the Republican Party right now. Run for school board, run for city council, run for county commission, in order that you can implement these freedoms again so that you can turn this tide that has been moving away from the founding fathers and what they meant to us.
One of the few good things that came out of this pandemic was children learning at home. Their parents got to see the indoctrination process, and it made them aware of what their kids were really getting from their public schools.
Yeah, and parents began to watch and see up close what their kids were being taught, and the kids were being gaslighted the same as we are. They're being taught that this nation's background of the past is something ugly, something to be ashamed of. That's not true at all. There are things in our past that are deeply wrong, but we at least acknowledge those. But for the most part, this country has been the destination for generations of people looking for a better life, looking for freedom, looking for prosperity, looking for where they can have their own property. And those are the things that this country should and can be proud about. But when our kids are being taught that it's not true, then we have the potential that we give away all of this magnificent freedom and liberty that we have through our Constitution. And it will be just that. A generation will simply give it away and walk away and said, well, it wasn't there. The truth is that it has always been there. It's there in our hearts, and our founding fathers made it possible. It's up to us to keep that. And so I'm suggesting to parents, run for school board, run for city council, run for county commission, run for those local offices, and start to impact your lives in your community. And we can regain this American dream simply by American people at the grassroots level reacting and running.
There's the bell. I guess it's time for me to tell you that if you would like to get involved with the Republican Party of New Mexico, check out the website at www.gopnm.org. The party has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. If you would like to talk to somebody in person, call Republican Party of New Mexico headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We'll look forward to meeting with you again next time right here on Inside New Mexico.